Hey, it's that time again, Killer Bees, and you know how we do it on a Friday. We catch up with the TV voice of your Houston Astros, Todd Callis, brought to you by Texas Star Grill Shop and Gulf Coast Chevy Buick GMC in Angleton. You can start shopping for your new vehicle at LanceZCars.com. TK joining us from the sunny state of California as the Astros getting ready to open up a weekend series against the Angels, who got the best of your Astros when they were here. And TK, I guess first and foremost, just an injury update is probably apropos because Bregman got hit on the hand, Tucker hit himself in the shin, and he was in a walking boot. What's the status for those two guys looking like for this weekend?
Good question. I think Bregman for sure will be should be back in there tonight. I don't think it's going to be anything more than just that one day for Bregman. Tucker missed the last couple of games, and then he was still kind of hobbling around when we got to the hotel yesterday. I haven't seen him yet today, so to be determined, but I think it's more likely for Bregman, but I think both could be back in there, but we'll see when the lineup comes out here in a little while.
So we got Fromber tonight, and after that little hiccup where he kind of had the breakdown, he seemed to have righted the ship. He's looked a lot better. Do you see the correlation with Caratini? It seems like, in my mind, Caratini has become kind of his Whoopi, kind of his Maldi of a year ago, where he's kind of settled back in. That veteran presence behind the plate can help, but he seems to realize that, you know, he is such a key cog that he's got to stay focused mentally.
Yeah, I think Caratini has helped the last couple of starts. Last time he did have that little meltdown that you said was when they led 6-1 against the Angels, and here he is going against the Angels again. So hopefully he's got a little vengeful mindset tonight coming off that. Probably his worst start. You just don't lose 6-1 leads, especially at home, especially to a team like the Angels, who you should beat. So hopefully he comes out here and does really well. He's pitched well most of his career against the Angels. Got more starts against this team than anybody else. He knows this lineup, even though they've changed a lot through the year. So hopefully he comes out here and sets a good tone for this road trip. These are three games against the Angels and three games against the Giants, where you'd like to see the Astros start to get on a run a little bit. I've said it before, I'll say it again. They need to start playing better baseball. They can't continue to kind of tread water here. I think these next 20 games leading into the final day of June are really going to be critical to see where this team is going.
The Astros are now 7.5 games out of first place, 5.5 out of the wild card spot. You know, the injury's starting to pile up. Joel has been saying for a while the Astros are going to be fine. But clearly, I don't know, maybe his faith is starting to wander. But what do you think? Do you think the Astros are going to be just fine?
Yeah, I'm going to go back to what I just said, the 20 games. If they keep treading water here, they're playing teams they should beat for the most part here in the next 20 games. They also have four off days between now and the end of June. So it's a favorable schedule for those two reasons. And if they continue, let's just say they go 10-10 and then they head into July and they're still sitting 7 games below 500, then I think you start to have real concerns as to whether this team can make a run in 2024. But I really do believe they have the talent. They're star-laden still. I mean, you look at across the roster, there's not many teams that have the kind of stars the Astros have. Just a matter of getting it put together, and I think this is a critical time this season, what they do in the next 3-4 weeks.
There's no doubt, TK, and the fact is that, you know, some of the guys that we were concerned about previously, and unfortunately Bregman gets hit on the hand, but he seems to be red hot right now and be getting back to what the Alex Bregman we're used to. And another guy like Yiner Diaz, you know, whether we knew it at the time or not, but he gets the back-to-back days off and probably gets a chance to kind of just detox from all of that on his shoulders from being a psychologist and all the prep from a catching perspective and defense. He just focuses on hitting, and now we see the Yiner that we were used to seeing a year ago. It seems like they're getting guys back that they really need to make this offense catch up to the pitching, which has done really well lately. Do you feel like they're kind of catching their groove offensively?
It feels that way, and I know, you know, as good as Tucker's been all year long, he hasn't been at his absolute best here the last couple of weeks, so it hasn't been a case where everybody's clicking at the same time, but yes, getting Bregman back, getting Yiner back, Tucker will be fine, Jordan's going to be fine, Altuve's going to be fine, Pena has been a real nice step up from what we've seen the last couple of years, so this is an offense that's going to score runs. You still have the situation at first base. They're trying to figure out if Abreu's going to give you what he gave you at the end of last year. That needs to be figured out, you know, sooner than later. And there have been some signs that he is feeling better, but he's also not quite all the way back to where we saw him at the end of last year, so It's kind of threading the needle, trying to win the most amount of games and still give Abreu his time to figure some things out. But, yeah, the rest of the lineup should be good. Jake Myers having a career year and just came off his best month ever. So we'll see how it plays out, but I'm not as concerned about the offense as I am maybe about the starting pitching depth right now.
You talk a lot about the talent the Astros have, and obviously, you know, it's still early, but at 28-35, basically only have like 99 games left. Why are you so confident this? Why are you so confident that this isn't who they actually are? Because your record.
No, it might be. Yeah.
Go ahead.
We're going to find out, right? I mean, you can't continue to keep doing this. You can't keep treading water. Like I said, they might be this team, and you're going to find out here sooner than later. It's a 162-game championship schedule for a reason, and that's because you figure out who the best teams are. And right now, the Astros have not been anywhere close to the best team in the AL West, so they don't deserve to be a playoff team the way they played the first 63. And if they do that over the next 20, then I'm going to have my doubts. But they still have time, and I feel like this is a time in the schedule where they have to get it changed, or else you might be looking at who they are.
Todd Callis, the voice of the Houston Astros, joining us like he does every Friday right here on the Killer Bees. And TK, you mentioned the first base situation because obviously it's something that everybody is paying close attention to. But it's almost that delicate balance in the outfield too because you got Chaz. Chaz had such a great year for you last year. He was such an integral part of this team. And he was injured early. He hasn't been himself. You want to give him the leeway to kind of get it back. But at the same time, you're trying to play catch-up and win games, and you got guys like Dubon and other guys that are hitting the baseball. That's got to be tough for Espada and company.
Yeah, it's kind of a tricky spot, you're right, because right now, when Tucker's back, whether it's tonight or tomorrow or the next day, when Tucker's back, Jake Myers is playing every day in center, so that leaves you one outfield spot to work with. And on the days when Joe Espada wants to get both Abreu and Singleton in the lineup, that's going to be Jordan on for the most part in left field. So that means, yeah, you're not going to see a ton of starts for either Mauricio or Chaz in left field with that setup. But, yeah, Chaz needs to get things going. It's been a really frustrating year for him. He's still the guy that helped him win a World Series a couple of years ago. He's still the guy that's put up great numbers in his first few seasons, and it just hasn't worked for him this year. But there's not going to be a ton of at-bats for him to figure it out. He needs to get it done sooner than later because like you said, there's too much competition right now in the outfield, not to mention, you know, Joey Loperfido, and now Trey Cabbage is up. So, yeah, it's sitting there in front of Chaz. He knows that he has to produce or he won't be seeing a lot of playing time.
And that's exactly where I was going with the Trey Cabbage conversation, because now a guy that really wasn't being factored in until they just kind of picked him up and took a flyer on him in the move with the Angels. And suddenly, every time you put him in the lineup, he can play multiple positions. He has some pop. He homered the other night. You look at him and you say he can play first base, he can play corner outfield. Is that a guy that maybe should get more consideration to pick up some innings and some play at first base and or the corner outfield?
Yeah, it's a legitimate thought. I mean, you have two guys right now in Singleton and Abreu that are strictly first base DH. So Trey's more likely to get time in the outfield, but is there a time when you can see him start at first base? Sure. And here he is in Anaheim. It's a little homecoming for him. This is the team he played with last year, and he made his debut against the Astros here at Angel Stadium. So maybe he does get a start or two in this series. We'll see how Joe plays it. But Cabbage is an interesting guy. He was a 30-30 guy last year in the minor leagues. He's got incredible athleticism, great speed, great power, a little bit too heavy on the strikeout. That's something that plagued him with the Angels early this year with the Astros as well at the minor league level. So, but he's an interesting athlete that could see more at bats as we go along here. And I would think Joe gets him in at least one, if not two, starting lineups while he's back here in Anaheim.
And he's got a little motivation going against his old team. I'm sure that would fire him up even more. Not that he needs it, but I'm curious now before we let you go. How do you see this series playing out? Because so many people are insistent that you have to sweep the Angels. The main thing for me is always just win the series, because if you win series, you're going to get back into whatever you need to get back in because you win more than you lose. It's a big series, but I don't think it's a desperate series to say you got to win them all.
No, it's hard to win every game on the road. Sweeping on the road is not easy. And even though the Astros have been a better road team than a home team last year, it's still – you can't go into a series on the road and expect a sweep. Having said that, you've got Bronner going tonight, coming off that outing against the Angels at home a few starts together. He'd like to turn around. You've got Hunter Brown going tomorrow. He's been at his best lately. And then you've got JV going on Sunday. I know they had trouble with Tyler Anderson back in Houston. He's pitching that middle game. So that's the one right now that, you know, you look at and say that could be a tough matchup with the way he pitched against the Astros. So, yeah, taking two out of three would be fine. If you can get a sweep, beautiful. Just keep playing good baseball and win as many games as you can and hopefully come home with a winning road trip here against the Angels and the Giants.
I know you like to walk and get out when you're on the road. Do you put your Mickey ears on and get around the craziness of the Disney, or do you stay as far away from it as possible, being that close to the theme park?
Yeah, when we used to, back in the day, stay near Anaheim, it was a little more tempting, and now we stay in this other area down by the beach. So I walked the beach yesterday. I think I got about like a 5-mile walk in and enjoyed my off day. 29 games in 30 days is a lot for the players, but even for the announcers, too, it catches up to you a little bit. So yesterday was a much-needed and much-appreciated off day.
Well, rest up and get us some victories. We'll be watching you starting tonight, you and Blummer, on the telecast. And thanks for joining us, as always.
Sounds good. Talk to you next weekend.
That is Todd Kallas. He is the TV voice of your Houston Astros, and he is brought to you, as always, by the good people at Texas Grill Shop and Gulf Coast Chevy Buick GMC in Angleton. You can start your shopping for a new vehicle at LanceZCars.com. Okay, we've covered the finals. We've covered Rockets. We've covered Astros. Let's get this man in his complete wheelhouse. Well, I said it, but in the hive with the Killer Bees as DJ and I break down some Texans minicamp and so much more. If you've got questions about your favorite football team, get them to us so we can get them to DJ. 713-780-3776. If you want to call or text, hit us up on YouTube, Twitch, and Twitter as well, as we will be kicking some football around. Coming up next, don't go anywhere. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM. Hey, we're back from Sam Houston Race Park. Another big weekend here at the track as everybody is ready to bet on some horses and have a good time. You guys can too. You can come out. They got all kinds of specials going on right now as we get ready for a big race weekend. Live racing starting at 6:30 tonight. General admission is only $5, and there's $4 big beers, $2 wines. You can come in and have some fun. And then, of course, tomorrow, watch and wager on the Belmont Stakes. All the information, shrp.com. Nick just came by with Joe from the track. We might have those guys on before we get out of here to give you guys just a little extra incentive for why you should be here. But always a great place and a lot of fun and a great environment if you want to follow the ponies and have a good time, especially on a big weekend like the Belmont Stakes. All right, so we talked about this previously. Jeremy's out. DJ Bieniemy is joining me. We know that he knows everything and covers all things Texans for ESPN, so we want to get into some Texans talk. If you guys have questions, 713-780-3776, text, call, you know the drill. Tweet us, however you want to get the questions to DJ. He's the man that has the finger on the pulse of everything going on with this team. And DJ, I want to start with the whole thing with Lassiter, because we know that the speed was an issue coming out of the combine.
Right.
And everybody was like, well, you know, is it football speed versus 40 time? What is it? And Caserio was very adamant that, hey, look, in pads, football speed, we like what we saw on tape.
Right.
And Jeremy and I had the conversation. Is he better suited inside, outside? Does he have a chance to be that second corner? Are you going to look at Henderson and Okuda? Now, all of a sudden, all we're hearing is how good Lassiter has looked in this mini camp. And I'm curious your thoughts, your takes, and then how does that translate because they're not in full pads going 11 on 11 full speed?
Yeah, no, Lassiter has looked better than Jeff and CJ early on. It's not like a big gap, but it's enough to where it's like, hey, he's a second-round pick rookie. You're going to go with that guy because he has way more upside for the future, right? Like, you have him under a four-year contract. CJ and Jeff, they're both free agents after this year. They're probably going to want to go somewhere else and try to see if they can compete for a starting role anyway when you have a guy that is looking like he has the inside track to start anyway, and he's a rookie, right? He's only playing on the outside also. I remember one practice. It was the practice in the bubble. Cole Thompson and I, we were just talking about Kamari, and we both realized, like, yo, he hasn't played that much on the inside if at all. Cole, like, he's only seen him take one rep there. So he's mainly been on the outside throughout the majority of the time. And the long speed, granted, we haven't seen that many plays where that's going to really get tested. But in terms of just being able to stay in his zones, you know, whether it's quarters, cover three, and actually, you know, do his job, do his assignment, stay over the top,
he hasn't had any issues there, and he's been able to transition out of his back pedal, break on the ball, because, again, you know, the video that the Texans Twitter put out of him breaking up a pass that was intended for Stephon Diggs,
yeah,
that's pretty good. I mean, again, like, you can
the deep route, start, too. He stayed
yeah,
with
yeah,
him
yeah, yeah, yeah,
from
yeah.
a speed perspective.
Right. So, again, like, if you can – if he can do that, then we're good. And to your final point about the pads, here's my thing. When it comes to cornerbacks, usually what you see from them in pad without pads is what you're usually going to get out of pads. If they can't cover, there's no reason to think that because they got pads, they're all of a sudden now going to be able to cover. And then vice versa. If they are covering, there's no reason for me to think now that they have pads, he won't be able to cover. Unless he's like a guy that's game is only predicated on physicality. But in today's NFL, you only got 5 yards to do that. So you can't even get away with that. So, you know, for you to be a good corner, you're really going to come down to your footwork. And what I've seen throughout minicamp is he's fundamentally sound.
So, and that's another thing. I've never been a guy that could be wowed by anything out of a minicamp.
Yeah.
Right? Because of that. But
yeah,
if there are things that will stand out to you, it is the ability, the speed, the size and the strength.
Yeah.
You know, especially when you talk about guys that maybe change their body type or guys that, you know, have been in the gym or guys that put on weight. And from, like you said, the skill positions, to me it's always been about just the breaks and the speed and the one-on-one competition to show, hey, I can compete with the ones at a high level. And so from that standpoint, I'll put more credibility in the fact that he has looked good guarding, you know, and staying with a guy like Stephon Diggs than I would if you told me, oh, in 7-on-7s, he looked fantastic.
Right, exactly. No, bingo. And again, like, I think the most important part, while, yes, it's only mandatory minicamp, it's only OTAs, only, you know, offseason programs, the guys that tend to run with the first team usually are the guys that are going to be running with the first team when the season come around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, that's usually how it goes. And the fact that he's already earning those first team reps at cornerback just shows the trajectory that he's on. Right?
So let me run this to you. So we know that GMs and coaches can be the master of the spin, right? They're going to pump up their guys. They're not going to be too critical. They want you to believe that everything that they've done and the guys that they have are the best thing since sliced bread. But we were talking about yesterday, it means something more when you hear and see guys like Stingley, guys like Will Anderson talking about a guy like Lassiter. Like, the fact that it's one thing if they're blowing smoke from the organizational standpoint. It's totally different if the guys that are out there huddling up every play with this guy or these guys are the ones that are the one blowing his horn.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think, you know, they're always going to be positive to start out when they talk about these guys. But you always have to pay attention to, like, how over the top they go. And they've been over the top. Obviously, Will was over the top. Stingley barely even tweets.
Right,
you know, like,
right.
He barely even tweets. And, like, he doesn't even run his own Twitter account. Like, he has his team kind of handle that.
Must be nice.
But if it's him, you'll know it's him. Just like when he tweeted, that's why we call him Locksmith.
Right.
You know, like, so that's clearly him. Like, these guys clearly see the talent in Kamari. So, again, he's earning the respect of his team. And going forward, he has the inside track to win that starting role.
So if he wins the starting outside corner, then are they looking at King as the guy inside, or what's the options on the inside?
Yeah, it's probably going to be King. I mean, I guess you could try Jeff, but
they brought in the guy from New England too, right?
Yeah, Miles Bryant. I mean, King knows this game. He's played in this game. And honestly speaking, I'm always weary of cornerbacks that came from New England under Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick could make a donkey look good at cornerback, because, like, Bill was like, is probably,
you know, a donkey's got a good chance to make an ass of themselves.
That's true.
Yeah.
But Bill is, like, one of the best defensive minds in terms of elevating cornerbacks or defensive backs this game has ever seen. How many times have we seen a guy leave Bill, especially at the cornerback position or safety, and completely fall off the map, face of the earth? I remember, like, Malcolm Butler, like, obviously he was really good with the Patriots. He gets to Tennessee. He has a couple good years. And in his last year in the NFL, he's, like, top 10 in tackles. And if you're a cornerback and you're, like, top 10 in tackles, that means them people are throwing at you a lot, and you're giving them a lot of completions. So, yeah, like, so, you know, I think Desmond King has the inside track for that nickel spot, because he's played it for D'Amico last year. He knows the scheme. He knows where to be. And again, like, that's a spot he's been playing for some time now.
Well, and the other thing, as you mentioned, but Jeremy always brings up, well, you know what, they cut him once, and then they brought him back, you know, so they really didn't have that high a regard for him when they cut him out of camp a year ago. But the fact is, when he came back, he made some big plays down the stretch for a team that had to fight and scratch for everything that they got. He can hit. He's experienced. I don't know your feelings on that, but it seems like he's a guy that fits everything that they want him to do. Maybe he's a little slower, yes, but I believe he knows ball enough to realize he can make up for some shortcomings.
And another thing is they had Tyrier Thomas, who had basically not a fully guaranteed contract, but a lot of his contract was guaranteed. So that just really came down to roster management at that point, where it was just like, all right. Because TT and Desmond King, they're pretty close. Like, I think TT's is probably better as a better cover corner. Desmond's probably better in terms of getting in the run game. But, it was kind of flip of the coin. And at that point, you know, the finances are going to kick in,
uh-huh,
in that aspect. So it was more of that than anything. But he came back, as you said, he was able to make some plays. And he started on the defense that went to the playoffs. And he was able to, you know, make some plays here and there. So, yeah, I don't necessarily see anybody being able to kind of take that role from him, because, again, last year what really hurt him was finances. Because, again, you had somebody, mm-hmm, that was competing with him that had guaranteed money, where King didn't have as much guaranteed money, and it clearly made sense to just go with TT, who, again, who I believe had better cover skills.
So if Lasseter's outside, King's inside, what does that mean for guys like Henderson and Okuda? Like, you know, like you said, maybe they're still searching and looking for a chance and an opportunity to start somewhere.
Right.
If they don't get the starting gig here, are they the kind of guys that you're either shopping or want that they want you to shop them? Or are they going to be content being insurance policies and backups?
If you shop Jeff Okuda or you shop CJ Henderson, what do you think you're going to get?
No, I mean, I'm not saying
Justin
that they're going to get.
Justin Fields and Zach Wilson and Mac Jones, they all just went for 6th-round picks.
Right.
What makes you think you're going to get anything for you know.
Or their agent just wants them to be, they want to get out.
Yeah, but like, nah, I think they're going to have to ride it. Because they're not in a position where they can demand that or leverage that. Because think about it, like Shaq Griffin, he got cut. I don't think he actually, but he got cut. And what happened to him, he went to the Carolina Panthers, was on practice squad, da 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 da. Like, the grass ain't always greener.
Sure.
Because we already know, especially at the cornerback position, guys get hurt, right? Like, it's rare where all three cornerbacks are healthy the entire year. They play 100% of the snaps. Injuries are going to happen. Things happen. You're going to get your opportunity, and this defense is scheme-friendly to cornerbacks. So it would behoove them to be patient, and I think they would be patient and just play their role. And then, you know, when the opportunity comes, take advantage of it.
Because you think about it, a year ago with the offensive line, that was the perfect example,
exactly,
of they didn't plan ahead for,
right,
the plethora of injuries that they experienced. And,
right,
then they were out, like, grasping at straws and panicking,
right, yep,
before the season started, trying to find guys to fill roles.
Right, exactly, exactly. I mean, like, the only guy that played every game was Shaq Mason, right?
Mm-hmm.
At right guard. I mean, you had Titus miss time. You had Laramie miss time. You had Kenyon Green, Kendrick Green, they both were out for the season. Patterson broke his leg. He was out for the season. Like, it was like a musical chair. And those chairs, you didn't want to sit in them because it was like, okay, am I next?
You might get injured, yeah.
You know? So, yeah, no. So, it would make sense for them to kind of just, you know,
make
the
out.
Team. Yeah, make the team. Because, like, hey, if you're on the team, you make the 53-man roster. Listen, you still get paid, man.
You're getting paid, and you get a chance to win.
Man,
and
you get You know, I don't know how much winning matters to cornerbacks, but, you know, you still getting paid.
I think by the end of your career, you want to experience that, especially if you haven't yet.
Yeah, but, like, you know, they're still, like, this is their fifth season in the league. Obviously, third team in 5 years, but they kind of want to cash in. Like, I can't blame them. I mean, you know.
Yeah, they got to prove that they
cool.
can get another deal. But
yeah,
at the same time,
yeah.
If you're getting paid, you might as well be with a winner instead of being with the Lions and the Falcons and, you know, teams that haven't won.
Well, the Lions are pretty good.
Now, but
now.
He ain't there.
Oh, yeah, you're right about that. But, I mean, hey, listen, wins can't get you paid. Wins
no,
cannot
no,
get
you're
you paid.
Yeah.
If I'm a cornerback and they're just winning games, but I'm on the sideline,
yeah,
I can't. I'm
well,
not getting
playing
paid
for
off
another
of that.
Deal. I get that.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, you got to be patient in that aspect.
All right, we got plenty more to get with DJ on the Texans. The next thing is the other guy that everybody seems to be talking about. If they're not talking about Lasseter, they're talking about a guy that looks like he might finally be coming into his own, no matter how much scrutiny and injury he's had. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about Kenyon Green next. Don't go anywhere. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
just want someone to talk to.
Back on at Sam Houston Race Park. DJ looking for someone to talk to. That's why you guys are out there talking to us and listening to us as we talk Houston Texans. We talked a lot of Rockets. We interviewed Mario Elie. We talked Astros. We interviewed Todd Callis. Now we're getting down to the heat of the matter when it starts talking about your Houston Texans and minicamp and everything that's been going on with the Texans. We talked about the entire situation with the secondary, the second corner, Lassiter, Henderson, and Okuda. But the thing that I started hearing about was the left guard position all offseason. It seemed to be the position less than strength, the position that everybody wanted to talk about because of the fact that Kenyon Green, first-round pick, has basically not lived up to billing. He's been hurt a lot, and you just didn't know what you didn't know about would he ever get a good run blocker, not a great pass blocker, and what were your options? How are they going to handle that? Now, lo and behold, he changes his number. He changes his body type. Everybody's talking about the fact that he looks so much better. Again, it's only camp. We don't know how he's going to do in pads, but at least the signs are pointing upward when it comes to a guy like Kenyon Green.
Yeah, I mean, he looks like an offensive lineman that can make an impact for an offense. He looks the part. One thing that I've noticed, like obviously Shaq Mason is kind of an anomaly, but like the majority of offensive linemen that are effective, it's really like they look the part. You know, like not saying Shaq Mason doesn't look good.
Well, some guys look doughy, right? But they're still good offensive linemen.
It's not as frequent as one would think. It's not as frequent as one would think. Because look at the ones that are good. Look at Quentin Nelson. He looks chiseled. Like, obviously, you know, he has, you know, whatever. But look at Laramie. Look at Titus. Like, let's go. Look at Lane Johnson. The list goes on. Mm-hmm. And Jason Kelsey.
Big fella in Detroit.
From Oregon.
Panay Sewell. Like, Panay Sewell, yep.
They're the Colts starting center, Ryan Kelly. Like, guys that are legitimate Pro Bowl level or effective level offensive linemen, they look the part. Now, there's some guys that they don't, and that's okay. Like, that happens. But you got to look the part, because most guys that don't look the part, they get tossed around like a rag doll at times. And now, and again, that just shows that, okay, he's starting to realize he's a professional athlete. This isn't college. You just can't get by with just being athletic or being able to just be bigger than everybody. Because I know you remember his rookie year that feels like centuries ago, and you didn't get him a pass. But that gauntlet where he went against, like, the Washington Commanders defensive line, the Tennessee Titans defensive line, and they were, you know, just absolutely wailing.
Yeah.
There were times where he was getting bull rushed into Davis Mills' lap, you know. But now I don't think that's going to happen nearly at all. Now he looks the part. Now we'll see what pads come on. But the fact that he physically looks good gives me so much more confidence. I think a lot of people's concerns with Kenyon Green was just his physique. You know, I have one homeboy that's a Texan fan, and he always just asks me, like, what Kenyon Green look like? Not how he looks on the field, but what he actually looks like, because, you know, that was a question regarding Kenyon Green.
Yeah, and you know, that's what we hear a lot, too. And, of course, the first thing that everybody's going to do is scrutinize because he was a first-round pick.
Right.
You know, Jeremy always talks about the fact that Kyle Hamilton was a guy you could have had if you didn't take Kenyon Green, but you chose Kenyon Green, and then he's never going to forget that. But if Kenyon Green was playing the way he played at A&M, then you probably wouldn't have to worry about Kyle Hamilton because you would have a starting left guard that's capable of playing with an offensive line that's going to hold their own and going to do a lot of good things. But instead, you not only had his inconsistencies, inability to pass block well, and all the things that happened early on, but then you get this whole debacle with Caserio where he said it wasn't an if, it was a win. We knew he was going to get hurt. So then they give him all this, hey, attaboys and admirable attempt to do what you did. But at the same time, if you knew it was coming, you also didn't add depth and didn't prepare for plan B.
Right.
And now there's even more reason to get mad at the kid before he actually really shows what he can do.
Right, yeah. With Jeremy, did he just start saying that about Kyle Hamilton this past season?
Yeah, I think it's been – I think he's looked at it now because of what Kyle Hamilton has become.
Okay, yeah. So it's probably you have Kenyon Green, the injuries, what Kyle Hamilton became, and then Jalen Petrie kind of regressing a little bit. That probably – because coming into last season, we all thought Jalen Petrie was going to –
sure.
Take
and
another
Pierce.
Step. Yeah. Like, those were two guys that we believed from that class, along with Stingley, those guys were going to take legitimate, you know, step forward. So he's probably a little, you know, sore about that spot, mainly because Petrie also regressed too. So, because in reality, coming into last season, you know, you could have had Kenyon Green, who was supposed to get better than you, thinking that Petrie was going to take that next step and become a Pro Bowl level safety, because he had a historic rookie type season. So, I get where he's coming from there, but, you know, it's good to see Kenyon Green is starting to look like the guy that you take in the first round. Because, you know, hey, perception and image is a lot. It means a lot. You know, like, if we saw C.J. Stroud looking like a sack of potatoes, we'd be like, what's going on over there?
Right, right.
You know, so when you're a pro athlete, your image matters, right? That's why Zion used to get killed so
sure,
much.
Sure, still does.
Because Zion looks like, you know, at times looked like he was overweight. And then the injury started happening. You know, is it causation? Maybe. But, like, at least you have a reason to pinpoint that. And at times, you could kind of say that with Kenyon Green, just in the sense of not fully investing into your body. Your body is what's going to make you a bunch of money. It's made you a bunch of money, but it can extend the length of your career because your body is your temple. And if you take care of that, you know, you're always going to give yourself the best shot to perform on Sundays.
Well, he came in with his temple being the temple of doom, and maybe now it's more like the temple of boom if he can perform.
Right.
But when you look at the offensive line as a whole, and you know, the three of us had this conversation last year about how high can the Texans go with their offensive line. But if he is going to be penciled in at the left guard and he does take that step that we've been waiting for him to take, and you have a healthy Tunsil and a healthy Howard and Shaq, is Juice the center? And then you just go?
Yep. Juice the center. I think that five could be, you know, I know I was saying last year they could be top 10. I underestimated how much they were going to struggle in terms of run blocking. But that had much more to do with everybody being in sync. Because, again, like, you know, in the zone, you know, read blocking outside, inside, everybody has to be on the same page. Like, all right, you're going to work on this guy, and you're going to move up to the linebacker. I'm going to go ahead and pick him up. And everybody, the chemistry matters, and playing together matters. And obviously they didn't do enough of that. Because think about it, from the second week of training camp, Titus Howard breaks his hand, okay? You have a little bit of continuity. Then, I forgot.
Juice was out.
Yeah. Juice, he ended up getting hurt at the end, and Kenyon Green gets hurt at the end. And then on top of it, you had Scott Questenberry get hurt like the first week of training camp. Mm-hmm. So, like, you had a whole bunch of moving pieces there. But I actually think they were solid in pass protection. Mainly because CJ had one of the more longer times to throw, but he was only pressured, like, at an average weight rate across the league. Most guys that are pressured at a high rate across the league – held the ball a lot, also had really bad offensive line.
And to your point, the first 2 weeks they had 11, they gave up 11 sacks, and they just looked awful. And then when we expected them to be at their absolute worst because of the injuries, they actually played some of their best football and didn't give up any sacks.
Yeah, so, I remember against the Steelers, right?
Yeah. So the big thing to me is, yes, you can have five individuals that play their actual position well, but if you don't have that continuity, I always said, and this has been the history of them in the recent years with their offensive line, if you got to play musical chairs and you don't have continuity because guys are going from right tackle to left guard and moving around from center to guard, you don't have the continuity to kind of help the helper and help the guys on the line that are helping you and have their back, and that means as much sometimes as just having five individuals that can play their actual position well.
Exactly. It's like if five guys were trying to carry a big couch, and like guy one is trying to move backwards, guy five is trying to move the opposite way, guy three is trying to move forward or whatever, like the couch not going to go anywhere.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, everybody got to be on the same page. And it's kind of similar to that with the offensive line. The fact that there's a lot more health. They're a lot healthier now. Granted, every offensive line, for the most part, is healthy. Obviously, Laremy and Titus, they didn't practice in minicamp. But D'Amico said that they're on track to be ready to go once training camp comes around, which is great news for them because they've invested a lot of money.
No question.
And assets into the offensive line.
Okay, so we're going to start, we're going to start DJ's mailbag because we're starting to get questions for DJ. At the top of the hour, we'll get some of the questions for DJ. If you have those questions, text us, 713-780-3776. You can call the program in Austin and let us know you're on the line. We'll get you in with DJ. If you want to hit us up on Twitter, which DJ never checks to respond to unless you direct message him,
you can
do that as well.
Thank you. That's for the safety of my employment.
I am here to also make sure that as the protector of DJ on this show, that I will make sure that as the prerequisite that you don't use Twitter to reach out while he's on the program. The easiest way is I'm looking at text messages right now, or you can do it on either YouTube or Twitch, and we'll continue to get your questions to DJ at the top of the hour. What I want to get into next before we get into your questions is more of mine because they're more important, and that would center around the running back position. They went and they got Joe Mixon, but they don't have a true number two. It's my belief that they don't have their number two on the roster currently and that they're going to go outward somewhere at some time to get him. I'm interested in DJ's perspective on that and a whole lot more. Stay right where you are. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM. You heard the man. We are at Sam Houston Race Park. It is myself and DJ Bienname, the beat reporter for your Houston Texans on ESPN, as we continue to roll into your weekend. And we're basically having you guys have a good time. We covered Astros. We covered Rockets. We covered the finals. We're now getting into some Texans talk, and we're leaving it up to you to ask some questions that are stacking up for DJ. We'll get to those at the top of the hour. But some of the things that Jeremy and I have been kicking around and top of mind coming into Texans training camp right around the corner, I wanted to get DJ's thoughts. Running back to me is an interesting position, DJ, because I believe a little bit more in Joe Mixon than Jeremy. But I have said all along that I think that the number two running back on this team when the season starts is not currently on this roster, and that it is important enough that I think that they'll be looking for teams that want to get rid of veterans. They'll be looking for guys that might be able to add depth, maybe not because they drafted one or because they're expecting Pierce to have a bounce back. And I'm curious your thoughts on that and the fact that they seem to be relying pretty heavily on a guy like Joe Mixon who might be a little bit on the backside of his career.
I mean, Damian Pierce looked good at minicamp. Like, he looked like he had that he looked similar to how he looked in 2022 training camp, which is some of the explosive runs. Like, he had some where it was like, oh, okay, that looks like the Damian Pierce that we expected to see. Because it's funny, like, what you see in practice is usually – but you're gonna see in the games when the season comes around. Like, there's some some exceptions to the rule, but that's one thing that I've stuck to. Right, for example, like Damian Pierce 2022 making plays. Damian Pierce 2023 in practice was pretty quiet. He wasn't running. He wasn't having those big runs, and we saw it in season. You know, Chancellor, you know, from KPRC. He gives me
Chancellor
a lot.
Johnson. Yep.
Yeah. He gives me a lot of you know poop for this, but. I was a Tank Dell skeptic at one point, and he obviously gives me a lot of, you know, crap for it. But he was making a lot of plays in training camp. So my eyes should have been like, oh, okay, he's going to make plays in the season. But I was like, all right, I want to see when the season gets around here. So granted, it is mandatory minicamp. But even last year at mandatory minicamp, I didn't see Damian Pierce make any runs like that. So I think Damian can be your number two, and you'll be just fine. And again, like, you're going to have Joe Mixon, who should be able to handle some of the workload. You're still going to have Dare, who can be your third down-ish type of back, and he gives you special team.
He's a hell of a kicker.
And he's a hell of a kicker.
Yeah.
And he gives you special team value. So I actually think, like, the number
so you don't think that the number two might be still out there?
Nah. But again, like.
Well, you're also the guy that didn't believe me when I told you who the quarterback was going to be at Tennessee.
That's true, though. But I did tell you when we were off the air, oh, wait, I'm getting text messages that Case might start.
Uh-huh. After you looked at me crazy when I said it a couple times.
I did look at you crazy.
You both did, yes.
I did look at you crazy. But, you know, I just couldn't fathom them going with Case Keenum in that moment with their season on the line. You know, and they got lucky. We can be honest, right?
Yeah, they got
lucky in that game.
Yeah,
they should have lost that game, but they didn't.
But would they have won the game if they didn't play Case?
I think they could have won that game.
I don't know if they'd have won with Davis.
They scored 16. What was it? 19.
It was
16?
A bad game.
Yeah, they scored 19 points with five periods with five full quarters.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Davis can get one thing Davis can do, he can get you to, you know, that 13 to 19-ish range. We know he can do that.
Yeah, he can stick his neck on the line for you. So with that said, and you're getting questions lined up for you as well, but when I look at it, is there any concern that Mixon, because he's a little older, like, what happens if he gets dinged up? And the other thing is Jeremy and I were talking about this the other day. They seemed to be the runner-up when it was coming to Saquon Barkley.
Yep.
But now it doesn't seem like there's that same passion in terms of getting that big-time upgrade running back. Now it's like, we traded for Joe Mixon, we'll be all right with the guys that we have, as opposed to when you hear Slowick and D'Amico talk, they talk about how much how important the running game is, and they want to run the football to be a good football team. It seems like systematically you either get a guy that's a huge upgrade, or because it's that San Francisco-type offense, we've seen Miami do it, we've seen other teams do it, they'll just do it by committee and find a way to make it work.
Yeah, I think that's what they're going to do. They're going to do it by committee, led by Joe Mixon for the most part. But they do view Mixon as a big upgrade, though.
Is he capable of doing – maybe not all the way like he did in Cincinnati, but is he still capable of that being that kind of guy?
We'll see, because there's a reason why they moved off of him, right? Like,
but wasn't it money-wise, too?
Yeah, but he wasn't making crazy money. He wasn't making
but
crazy
money. But
they had
the young kid coming up, and so they just decided – you know, because Cincinnati's cheap.
They are cheap, but, like, it wasn't like Joe Mixon was asking for Saquon money the year before he took a pay cut anyway, just so he could stay in Cincinnati.
Right, right.
So, you know, it wasn't, you know, obviously they tried to get Saquon Barkley, and they were ponying up, but obviously the money got too large for them to continue after that. But they do view that Joe Mixon is going to be upgraded. I remember we down at the owners' meeting, I asked him if he's worried about any of the decline that running backs kind of face once they hit that age. And he said he's not – D'Amico said he's not anticipating any decline. He still thinks that Joe Mixon is a playmaker. Because the one thing they do, they always trust the film. Even though some of the analytics might not favor Joe Mixon and the trajectory of his career right now, but they trust the field, they trust what the film, they trust what they're seeing. So they view Joe Mixon as a bigger – because think about how much they talked up Devin Singletary. They talked that brother up, yep. And then they went and they got Joe Mixon. So they must think that Joe Mixon is much better than Devin Singletary. So we'll see how that plays out.
They went on record at the end of the season of saying they wanted to improve – the running game, they wanted to improve the defensive line. And now you're looking at it and you're going, well, they improved the defensive line, but the two defensive tackles.
They improved the DN spot.
They're right. They improved the pass rush. Did they improve the defensive line? And from a running back standpoint, Singletary was really good for this ball club.
Yeah,
so sure. They have to believe that Mixon is at least capable of being better than that. And not that they're massive shoes to fill, but at the same time, he did really well here.
Yeah, but I'll say this. You got Stephon Diggs, Nico Collins, and Tank Dell. Hey, the running game ain't working. Let's go, CJ.
You got a good tight end, too.
Yeah, you got a good tight end, Dalton Schultz. Let's go. You know what I'm saying? Like, obviously, they brought in Joe Mixon, but this team is going to go as far, not necessarily as far as CJ takes them, because I don't, you know, it's rare where the quarterback takes you all the way, where it's just you just hop on the quarterback's back. That's rare. Even with Mahomes, like, you know, we'd love to talk about Mahomes this, Mahomes that, da, 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 da. He always has a good team around him and a great defense. He just makes key plays. But again, like, they do, if the running game isn't working to the best of its ability, you do have Stephon Diggs, Tank Dell, and, you know, Nico Collins to kind of rely on to make plays.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, and as much as you had, if you had to pick one or the other, what are you more excited to watch? I'm excited to watch the offense. I know that the defense made some really key acquisitions in free agency, but at the same time, the defense still has some question marks.
For
there's
sure,
some holes
sure,
to fill.
Sure,
when you look
sure.
at this offense, if the only thing we're talking about is if Kenyon Green's going to finally be the Kenyon Green at left guard that we need him to be, the rest of this offense is loaded.
Yeah. I mean, listen, they got six primetime games not because they added Daniil Hunter. They got six primetime games because they got Stephon Diggs.
Yeah.
People want to see that offense, and they want to see C.J. Stroud in year two. That's why they got six prime. If they didn't get Stephon Diggs, they might have had four. You know, they might have had four. You know, maybe four and a half. Maybe something got flexed. But getting Stephon Diggs is what kind of propelled them to, like, oh, this team might be a team, a dark horse that can go to the Super Bowl.
Is there a reason why he didn't talk to the media until minicamp? He was in Houston. He was in, I think, you know, because he was tweeting about the if you miss your exit.
Yeah.
You know, he was in town. Normally teams, as you know from covering multiple teams, they normally have a press conference the minute the move is made and the deal is done. And it would just seem to me that he would have already talked, and it took so long for him to actually talk to the media.
I would say I'm going to frame my words very carefully.
Mm.
There are some things that the Texans struggle with when it comes to understanding that they're a $1 billion organization. I think sometimes that, you know, from the top down, they don't realize, hey, you guys made a big move.
Yeah.
Let's get out in front and discuss it and keep it pushing. Right? Get it out the way.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like, you know, like a lot of corporations do that, you know, like whether it's the White House or whether it's like a big, if it's like a big news story, get out and you discuss it because you're
well, it's a positive, right? It's not like, you know, you do the news dumps on Friday afternoon when you're trying to bury it in the weekend and you don't really want people to pay attention.
But
if you acquire Stephon Diggs for a team that has C.J. Stroud and a bunch of weapons and a chance to improve, that's something that you want to start blasting off fireworks and neon signs and sending out, you know, media blasts.
Yeah.
And instead, he doesn't talk till minicamp?
Yeah, no, hey, listen, you know, everybody in the press locally, we were on them asking over and over and over and over and over. But, you know, I'll give the PR some slack. You know, some of it was above their heads in that regard. Yeah.
So there was another question for me, but you guys got questions that are stacking up for DJ. We've got several here that we're going to get to. We're going to do DJ's mailbag next. If you have a question for DJ on the Texans or NFL, shoot it to us, 713-780-3776 on the text line. You can hit us on YouTube or Twitch or Twitter, although DJ doesn't check it. We'll be back with the final hour of the show next on the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.